Hey guys, it's Lauren jumping in before the episode begins to let you know we are still on tour. Well, not now, but soon. Because West Coast, we are coming to you. I'm sure you're like, why would I pay to see Every Outfit when I listen to them for free every week? Because this is not a live recording of our weekly podcast. No, this is a 90-minute demented PowerPoint presentation inspired by all the things we talk about. We're getting into Sex and the City. We're getting into Hot Topics. There's a game show. There are costume changes and truly so much more. We literally threw the kitchen sink into the show because we don't know if we'll ever tour again. So we will be in San Francisco on Sunday, June 16th at the Independent. Yes, this is Father's Day. Fuckettes, perhaps take your father to this show. Our dads will be in the audience. The next day we'll be in Portland at the Helium Comedy Club, and then we will be in Seattle on June 18th at the Triple Door. But LA fuckettes, have no fear. We are doing not one, but two nights at the Bourbon Room in Hollywood on Friday, June 28th and Saturday, June 29th. You can go to everyoutfitting.com/tour to buy tickets, or just scroll down in the episode description and find the link to your city. We hope to see you there.
I spent $40,000 on shoes.
What's the matter, Morty?
Moral, this thing.
Can't you buy our old dress?
Moral, this thing.
Great gowns.
Moral,
beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Moral,
no, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless. And today we are discussing one of the best Sex in the City episodes ever, La Douleur Exquise, The Exquisite Pain.
Thank you for saying that and not me. Best fake restroom in the series. The fashion's on point. Carrie is being kind of shitty, but this is one of the rare occasions, like with the Post-it breakup, it is quite justified.
Yeah, I don't think she's being shitty. I think her anger is completely justified. But we'll get into that. This is a real highlight of season two, and this is where the show really started to hit its stride, I think.
In rewatching this episode, it really felt like, oh, this must be what's going on in New York right at this moment.
Yeah, a city full of perverts, if this episode is any indication. It starts with a Carrie voiceover about how New York City restaurants are always looking for the next new angle. Last year, it was fusion Cajun. Last month, it was mussels from Brussels. What?
Well, but that's what they would call Jean-Claude Van Damme, the muscles from Brussels.
Okay. And tonight it's S&M. Cut to this S&M-themed restaurant that Samantha is doing PR for.
Carrie has a great line. Her first line of the episode is, this is what happens when the mayor shuts down the sex shops, which feels ripped from the headlines, right? Because a few years prior, Giuliani has cleaned up Times Square, taken all the porn theaters, and now there's Disney and M&M shops.
And the Virgin Megastore. May she rest in peace.
It was all about the Union Square one.
But the Times Square one had the movie theater in the basement where I saw Roman Coppola's CQ. I don't know why I remember that, but anywho.
So Samantha is manning the door, and it made me realize that we usually just see Samantha doing PR things in an office, whether it's her office or like Richard Wright's office. I feel like this is one of the few times that we see Samantha on scene doing PR work.
And she's dressed like a dominatrix at the Moulin Rouge.
I know I will never get over Sex and the City 2, but I really, really cannot get over the fact that they were like, oh yeah, Samantha worked at CBGB
okay,
in the
80s. You've literally mentioned this like 50 times on the podcast.
I understand that, but Samantha being a dom for like Jordan Belfort in the late 80s, and that was her entree to the fast-paced world of PR, is much more likely, especially with her little dom behavior at the door that we see.
Well, Samantha has very intense top energy and really always has. So she would be a great dominatrix, absolutely.
Do you think our friend Henry, who's able to, to give you a number of your top...
She's a 10.
Yeah,
she is a 10. She is a 10. Okay, well, actually, where do we think all of the girls fall? Because Carrie seems like a very big bottom.
Yeah, she's a sub.
I think Miranda is verse.
For those who don't know, we have a friend named Henry, and he gives...
Again, we've mentioned this so many times, but...
Chelsea, like Quentin Tarantino says about his oeuvre, you never know which film of mine will be someone's first. This could be someone's first Every Outfit episode.
This could also be someone's 10th. Yeah, this could also be someone's last.
Our friend Sight Unseen basically is able to give you a score of if you are a top or a bottom. And I think Miranda would be very insulted of how low her score is.
No, I think Miranda is literally like a 5.
And I think she would take it too personally.
It's not a diss to be verse. I feel like that should be the goal.
I think Charlotte might surprisingly be a 7 or something.
No, though, because it's like when you think about like the nature of her like fairy princess role play, you know, scenario. I feel like that's very like bottom vibes.
That's true. And the kinkiest thing that she brings to this opening is her quote unquote kinky hair.
Yes.
Stanford asks, excuse me, when did wild sex come back in style? And Carrie goes, I think it was the weekend you spent at the Barney's Warehouse sale, which this is the New York specific dialogue that I come to this series for.
I know. And I know that there are still sample sales in New York because I see the lines on TikTok, but I miss the communal experience of the Barney's Warehouse sale. No dressing rooms, women just stripping in public. I saw people fight over clothes at the Barney's Warehouse sale. It was very like savage, you know, Lord of the Flies vibes over just like some random Proenza schooler dress.
So now everyone is at the table. A waiter comes by in very little leather gear and gets the order wrong. And so Samantha punishes him. This restaurant is a New York Magazine expose waiting to happen.
These two things, like eating and sex, require such opposite mindsets. Unless you're one of those people that's like one of the force feeding people, which, not to kink shame anyone, but wouldn't be my choice.
Yeah, Charlotte has a line about like, aren't these people embarrassed? And Samantha goes, don't be so judgmental. This is just a sexual expression. All these people have jobs and pay their bills. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Are they waiters or are they subs who are submitting themselves to play waiters to be punished if they get an order wrong? Like, what's happening here?
No, it's true. It's true. Like, are those all actors?
Aspiring actors who are just trying to pay the bills.
I don't know.
Although I did notice in this rewatch that the couple behind Charlotte, the man, I believe, his back is turned to us, but he does seem to be wearing a gimp mask. So it's like, are the people attending the kinky? A lot of questions.
See, this makes sense as a concept for a bar to me, but not a establishment where food is served. I like how they're talking about like how everyone has a fetish, and someone's like, what's Charlotte's fetish? And Stanford is savagely like, she has a thing for Crabtree and Evelyn Potpourri.
Potpourri is really lost favor. That was, my mom was a big Potpourri person. I feel like candles and those reed diffusers, which, as we've talked about in previous episodes, disturb you, have taken over Potpourri. But where's the millennial direct-to-consumer Potpourri company?
Hey, it's coming, I'm sure.
Does that have to be us?
It is not going to be us. The thing with potpourri, it literally gets dusty. And yeah, candles do too, I guess, if you don't use them regularly. But like, I don't know, there's something just gross about it at a certain point. Although, yeah, I'm sure we're only one company away from everyone's mind being changed about potpourri.
First they came for the tin fish, next I think it's potpourri.
The second Byredo drops the potpourri, there's just going to be a whole new product category.
I think Stanford has some of the best lines of this episode. So Carrie gets up to leave so that she can catch Big before his flight. And he goes, sit your ass down, Mistress Carrie. There are drinks present, which a good rule of thumb in general. Don't leave until the glass is empty.
But she does leave. She takes Samantha's top hat and her whip.
Yeah, Carrie would willfully take that top hat. The whip is more forced upon her.
Great prop, though. Shows up at Mr. Big's apartment.
Goes, well, laugh. It's a joke. And I'm like, is it? I guess when she said Big colored outside the line, she didn't mean any kinky sex stuff.
Well, I just don't think Big is a bottom, so he's probably not, like, into it.
Fair enough. He is into her outfit, which is a great carry outfit.
Very good outfit.
He does have his way with her, and I've always wondered why he pushes her up against the door and why he takes her necklace off first. And I'm like, is that a stand-in for taking off her top since Sarah Jessica Parker has a no nudity clause?
Yeah, I didn't even notice that, in all honesty. So meanwhile, across town, Stanford has a very active secret sex life on the internet. He is Rick 9+. This is such a great Stanford episode. One of the best, I would say.
I do realize, aside from, I think, a singular brunch scene, Samantha drops off in this outfit, and Stanford is sort of the fourth girl. with his plot line for this episode. And Stanford's storyline made me miss online chat rooms. I know we were like adolescents when this time period took place.
Yeah, we just go into them to like make fun of people with our friends. But like, do people have cyber sex anymore? Like, do people do this kind of thing in chat rooms? Like, does that even exist? Because it seems like everyone has moved more towards like chatting with people on OnlyFans and like cam girls and stuff.
I was thinking about this, and yeah, the days of a online chat room that you can join, aside from, you know, a chat roulette or something, which even chat roulette, right, is a one-on-one or two-on-two experience, I guess Reddit has sort of taken that space over.
Right, because if you have, like, a highly specific fetish or something, you would just find the Reddit thread about it.
Yeah, I think commenting has replaced the chatting. Another great nostalgic idea, bring back chat rooms.
I love how you see the screen and like what people are saying. One comment is, anyone in P-Town August 9th? Another one is, Ricky Martin is hot, hot, hot. I'm like, was Anthony in this chat room? Anyway, this is all to say that Stanford has met another user called Big Tool for You.
And this is a underwear fetish chat room. I don't know if you clock that.
Cut to the next day, Charlotte is shoe shopping.
She does. She runs into James Urbanek. Is that his name?
Yes, yes.
See, I only know him as the guy next to Einstein in Oppenheimer.
See, I know him as Julie Klausner's long-suffering boyfriend on Difficult People.
Yeah, and I can't remember if he has any lines in Oppenheimer, and I won't be watching this three-hour film again, but he's there, and it was very distracting for me while watching that film.
Yes, he is an iconic character actor, and he is the shoe salesman. Charlotte wants these shoes, but they're $400 and she can't buy them because she's saving for a summer share in the Hamptons.
I feel like this is one of the few times we hear the girls talk about saving for anything.
They talked more about their finances in the earlier seasons. Like even Carrie being like, oh, I can't go out. I have to pay off this credit card bill or whatever.
Right.
Things did feel more financially precarious in the beginning of this show. Although that's like the bougiest thing to save money for.
That's true. And so he gives her a half off deal, which talk about pretty privilege. Charlotte's like, all right, great.
Meanwhile, Miranda is at Strand or some other outdoor, semi-outdoor bookstore looking at historical biographies. I know we were talking about this in one of the And Just Like That episodes. It's like, where did we learn that Miranda is into this shit?
And it's this episode.
It was this episode.
And she runs into a pre-fame Will Arnett.
And I also want to note that she's wearing the most, like, of the era outfit, which is, like, a thin orange V-neck shirt. It was the kind of thing that you would find at the Barney's warehouse sale with, like, hot pink camo pants. Very Lilith Fair kind of vibes. Very, like, Tibetan Freedom Concert energy.
Yeah, I think this episode for Miranda is the most Lilith Fair outfits we get. Because there's another walk and talk with Charlotte and Carrie later in the episode that's pretty wild as well.
Yeah.
So they have a flirtation over the books. He seems incredibly well-read. And as we thought happened in New York, you just meet people at outdoor bookshops and you instantaneously have a date with them.
I will say, Will Arnett does have pervert face.
I mean, the deep widow's peak doesn't help either.
Cut to Carrie and Big. Big reveals that he might have to move to Paris for 7 months to a year, to which Carrie's like, how long have you known about this?
Right. Well, the way that this comes about, which I think is what sets Carrie off, is that she only mentions it because back-to-back Hamptons share references. She's like, should I go in with Charlotte or are we going to do something? And then that's when he's like, oh, I might not be here this summer. He punts it in true Mr. Big fashion of like, how long have you known about this? And he's like, I'll know more when I get back from the trip and like, we'll figure it out.
Don't get carried away. I love that pun. Cut to years later. Here's to a man who got carried away.
And then cut a few years even further and then Carrie's dumping the ashes in the set.
So cut to Carrie bitching with the girls about this. She's annoyed because she wasn't a factor in his decision-making process.
No, and Samantha has that great line that women walking around thinking we and their, meaning men's version of we, is me and my dick.
And this is when Carrie first realized,
in love relationships, there is a fine line between pleasure and pain. In fact, it's a common belief that a relationship without pain is a relationship not worth having. To some, pain implies growth. But how do we know when the growing pains stop and the pains take over? Are we masochists or optimists if we continue to walk that fine line? When it comes to relationships, how do you know when enough is enough?
Is it a common belief that a relationship without pain is a relationship not worth having?
Yeah, I don't think that's a common belief. And I don't agree with that, certainly.
In rewatching these episodes, I think we've had a lot of not great. I couldn't help but wonder, this is pretty great. I mean, just the idea of like, are we masochists or optimists? How do you know when enough is enough? I think if you have to ask that question, it's probably enough.
Yeah, like you're probably a masochist. And it's enough.
And you're with the wrong person. Or try to work things out.
Sure, but she's in a very dramatic relationship with someone who can't commit to her. And there's no need for a high drama relationship.
Especially when you're as fabulous as Miss Carrie Bradshaw.
Absolutely. You don't actually need, like, the pain and the drama to make a relationship exciting. Although somehow it seems like that when you're younger.
So then we have Miranda and I'm just going to call him Will Arnett throughout this episode, their first date. They start having sex and it made me wonder, is this the most transgressive thing a character on Sex and the City has done? Have public sex with someone they just met?
I mean, I guess it's kind of by a sidewalk. Someone could see them, but it doesn't seem like the most egregious kind of public sex one could have in New York. But that said, I am generally opposed to this. I don't begrudge anyone for having sex in like the bathroom of a club or like at a public park at night or something like normal. But I also don't think that people have the right to traumatize random people. As someone that's been traumatized by randoms having sex in public, if you have a public sex fetish, just go to a sex party.
Exactly.
Just go to whatever that restaurant is that Samantha's doing the PR for.
I would have loved for that to have come full circle and Will Arnett takes her to that place.
That's actually the solution to his definitely not legal or socially acceptable kink.
Another thing that I love about this episode that we lost as the seasons went on, which is people gathering and hanging out at Carrie's apartment, because you know what? You can't go out every night.
No.
So her and Stanford are together in her apartment. Stanford reveals, I have cyber sex on the internet, which I love this particular era from like 95 to 2000, where not everyone had the internet. More people are getting AOL, but it's like,
wanna cyber?
Yeah, wanna cyber. But movies at this time, like, we hadn't defined that we were gonna call cell phones cells or phones, like, right. Cell phones. We would call them cellular telephones.
Right.
I love that he needs to say, I'm not only having cyber sex, it is on the internet. Frankly, Stanford is incredibly brave because meeting someone online is an everyday occurrence today, but in 1999?
Yeah, that's true. It was not normalized at that point.
And really, Carrie would actually be dedicating an entire week's article to this new cyber sex phenomenon.
Well, she did. I mean, she mentioned this in her article, poor Stanford. Everyone knows about his secret sex life.
This is where we get maybe the first Carrie, oh no, you didn't, in her Bronx accent, I realize.
So he reveals that Big Tool for You wants to meet him at an after-hours gay club in the meatpacking district. And then he reveals that he hasn't had good sex since before Cats was on Broadway. Just for context, Cats debuted on Broadway in 1981. So this is what, 1999?
Yeah.
He's had a rough go.
I mean, I feel like it's good he's telling Carrie for no other fact of like, if you don't hear from me, please call the cops. So after Stanford leaves and Carrie has had a few Cosmos, she decides to call Big. And maybe I'm telling on myself, but Carrie doing this, like calling Big in the middle of the night to unload on him, is maybe the most relatable Carrie thing.
Well, I think drunk, sloppy, angry Carrie is just easy to relate to.
If she said the content of what she says to Big in this conversation, you know, during daylight hours, perhaps when he was ready to hear it, he would have been more receptive to it. But also, I mean, that's the point, is like, he himself is so emotionally constipated that he would never be ready to hear what she has to say to him.
Or maybe he's just not that into her.
Should we just play this?
Yeah.
I think about you all the time. No, Correction. I think about us all the time.
Can we get into this another time? I was sleeping.
Oh, look. It's never a good time for you. You're always sleeping, or you're ready, or you're going. You're always going. You're fucking taxi, and then you're on a plane to France for maybe a year. Well, you're a freaking old man. You should be thinking about somebody else. This is not fake us. This is real. Even if you don't know it, it is. I am a woman. A woman.
Have another cocktail, woman.
No. This isn't about cocktails. This is about basic human decency. This is about taking responsibility. It's about being a grown-up. It's about being a man.
I am a man. I'm a tired man. It's 5:30 in the morning here.
Well, you know what? You better get used to it, because if you move there, this is how our relationship is going to be. You're going to be sleeping when I'm eating, and I'm going to be sleeping when... Shit.
I don't know if it's maybe the best thing to say to a man, and certainly not a man like Big, that it's like, you better get used to this, because when you'll be sleeping, I'll be eating, and when you're eating, I'll be... Oh, fuck. And she pours the drink on herself, which is so good.
Yeah, I really do love this Carrie. That was maybe not the best look for her, though.
No, as she says, she instantly regrets it in her cosmopolitan haze.
Meanwhile, Miranda back at it again with Will Arnett.
In the back of the cab, he goes down on her. And I have to say, this is the first time I've heard a man refer to going down on a woman as giving head.
No, I've definitely heard this both ways.
Also, this entire episode is like a real sex episode.
No, and I love it. I absolutely love that. Look, everyone in New York has at the very least made out with someone in the back of a cab.
Well, of course.
At a certain point, having full sex, I think, becomes a bit of a safety concern. I'm sure some cab drivers are into it, but others are like super religious, so could be a bad vibe, potench.
Yeah, I think anything beyond second base should not be tried in the back of a cab.
I agree.
Uber. A friend who's driving you.
Well, definitely not Uber, because now they can actually just report you and ban you for that. You know what I mean? With like New York City cab, there's kind of like no accountability for passengers or drivers, really. I mean, yeah, you can write down someone's cab number, but half the time it's like not even the actual person driving the cab.
So Charlotte is back with the shoe salesman. This is just like her siren's call, this like one shoe store.
She wants these shoes, but they're $500. They're also kind of ugly, might I just say?
I was gonna say, all of the shoes, I know that everyone's in love with late 90s and Y2K style, but it's like, these shoes, every single one of them she's trying on, do not carry over to today.
No, we can definitely leave these in the 90s. They're $500, again, still saving for that Hamptons timeshare situation. So he's like, you know what? I'll just give them to you for free.
And she's like, why? And he's like, because these beautiful feet are tired and they need a little rub.
Who wouldn't do this? This is the best thing ever. Also, I love that Charlotte has a pinky ring on one of her toes.
Very of its time as well. Or are they back?
Yeah, no, they're definitely back.
This is really hurting no one.
Yeah, also just like of all the kinds of sex work, this just seems like the most chill. Like, you just get free shoes and like a foot massage.
As Carrie says, when a shoe fetish meets a foot fetish, all reason goes out the shop window.
Then we get this walk and talk immediately after with Carrie and Miranda. Carrie's like, Charlotte, what is happening south of your ankles? Which she would never say, because these shoes are ugly. And
well, I was more impressed that she's clocked like they're $500, right?
Yeah. And then Charlotte kind of has to explain the whole story. And then they shame her into like returning the shoes. Why?
Yeah, because one, she's worn them already. I think it's more a like, don't do it again. I think what stops Charlotte, it's the fact that she said the situation out loud that made her realize like, oh, this is kind of low-key sex work and that's not me.
Okay, so then she goes to return them because like they've guilt tripped her. And this is where I really don't understand the logic, because she's like, I can't accept these shoes because, without saying it, they were in exchange for sexual favors, basically. And he's like, I can't accept them because they're worn, but you know what you could do for me? More sexual favors. And she's like, okay.
All right, but just this one last time, I do want to go back to this walk and talk because these street style looks.
Oh yeah, incredible.
I do miss Carrie wearing just a casual 1950s vintage dress. She's talking about losing her shit at Big and how she's going to recover from this and, you know, how do they move on? And she goes, and what is so awful about spending a week or two in Paris? And I wanted to get your perspective as someone who's been in what I'll call an ultra long distance relationship. How do you feel about a simple New York to Paris long distance relationship?
I know, 7 months to a year, to me, that's like nothing.
And also the flight is pretty chill.
The biggest deciding factor as to which a relationship like that works is, do you have the financial means to do these transatlantic flights? Because if the answer is no, then yes, that sucks. You wouldn't see your partner for 7 months to a year. But Mr. Big is famously wealthy. Like, he will pay for your business class flights to and from Paris.
Yeah, I mean, if Carrie was less toxic, she would figure out a work through. But the problem with Big, and especially Big in this era, is she would find solution after solution and he would just block them. I'm sure he wouldn't pay for that.
I think he would, but when she says, oh, I could like move there, that's weird language to use. Then he's like, oh, don't do that. You'd be doing that for yourself.
Right. One final thing about this walk and talk, because there's so much great of the moment pop culture references, is when Miranda talks about having...
oh, her public sex fling. Yeah,
right. I think it's Carrie who goes, how very George Michael of you, which literally the year before George Michael was caught soliciting an officer under the pretense of gay sex in
a public park. Yes,
across from the Beverly Hills Hotel. Very chic.
Oh, it was that park?
Yes.
Oh my God. I drive past that park like every day, not knowing which park it was. That's incredible.
My mom is a huge George Michael fan. So I grew up listening to George Michael, and then especially the song that he released the year that this episode comes out in 1999, as a cheeky response to that, called Outside.
Right, right. Yeah, love George Michael, R.I.P.
And Charlotte has a great line about Miranda's situation. She goes, this is supposed to be a relationship, not outward bound. You've got to get him in a bedroom and find out what's really going on there. Okay, shall we get to Carrie showing up at Big's apartment?
Sure.
What possessed her to do this?
What do you mean? That's delightful. If someone came... if someone came to my apartment looking hot, in another little 50s dress with McDonald's and a beret and a whole bit, I would be utterly delighted.
No. Okay. This is my point. This is something Hannah Horvath would do, okay? Because
she learned from the best.
You know what a great way to apologize for my bad behavior? Instead of speaking honestly, why don't I do a bit that involves French cosplay and McDonald's?
She's lightening the mood. She did need to apologize after that drunk dial.
McDonald's is not something I associate with Mr. Big. Like, if she got him maybe a cut of veal or something.
I'm sure he likes McDonald's. Everyone likes McDonald's.
That's true.
That should honestly be their slogan.
I mean, look, Big would never be ready to have this conversation. I don't know if having this conversation with someone right when they get off a plane. I think that's something that I've had to learn.
The hard way.
Well, the hard way, but also it's like, just because I want to have a very important conversation right now so that my anxiety wanes,
right,
doesn't mean that's going to yield the best results or that's what my partner wants to hear in the moment. You know, maybe eat Le Big Mac first.
Right. And this is where Mr. Big says, you know, I don't want you to uproot your life and expect anything.
It's so aggravating, right? Because she's like, look, here's a solution. I can move to Paris. I could come, you know, every other week or whatever. And he's like, but you'd be moving from Paris for yourself, right? I mean, don't move for me. And then she's like, well, why would I move to Paris if it wasn't for you? I'm just saying, I don't want you to uproot your life and expect anything. She then throws Le Big Mac, because the expect anything is, I'm not going to marry you. Don't think that this means anything or you're going to end up with a ring. I mean, that's the unspoken conversation.
But it also could mean, I am here for work. I will be consumed with my job. If you're going to move here... I'm just sorry to be a Mr. Big apologist.
I know, what's happening?
No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Do you think they put her in a beret because it's especially embarrassing? Because that is one of the things she shouts at him, which is, I'm running around town in a beret buying your greasy food and you don't even care if I'm in your life.
Well, yes, it's extra humiliating. She has a right to be upset about it. He's handled this terribly.
Because she's not a consideration in his life. And, you know, I often in my rewatches start in season two, so I forget that their breakup in season one kind of follows a similar cycle, right? That she sees him with his mother at church one morning. He won't introduce her to his mother.
Well, to be fair, she did literally stalk him, so he probably should have broken up with her right then and there.
I was about to say, she equally acts out in a different way. So yeah, she finds herself back here, what, 6 months later, a year later? Not a factor in his life at all. This is a Carrie that we don't see, which is she curses a lot in this episode.
She said pussy in the pilot.
I know, but she rarely says fuck.
This is about us getting closer and you getting so freaked out that you have to put an ocean between us. Why is it so hard for you to factor me into your life in any real way?
I guess old habits die hard.
Well, maybe I can't do this anymore.
I understand.
Yeah, I bet you do. You said you loved me.
I do.
And why does it hurt so fucking much?
Great scene. Great chemistry between the two of them. Great dialogue.
There's a lot of voiceover, I imagine, that's supposed to be in the article where... Then this is might be the most self-aware Carrie has ever been in the entire series, where she says, I was the real sadist. He might be the one with the whip, but I was the one who tied myself down, tied myself to a man who was terrified of being tied down. That's good writing.
So we go to this sort of supercharged emotional scene to Stanford's meatpacking district underwear party.
Stanford's low-key version of cruising.
Yes, and he doesn't realize that it's an underwear party, so he has to strip. Fat Boy Slim's Rockefeller Skank is playing, and some guy hits on him.
I know, I thought that was so cute.
Not Big Tool for You.
I forgot that that storyline is never really resolved. I guess Big Tool for You never
showed up, or did he ghost Big Tool for You?
Or I'm sure Big Tool for You's wife in New Jersey got sick and he couldn't sneak out of the house. I don't know.
But this is a win for Stanford, because he's put himself out there in a physical environment where there are other gay men.
He got hit on and it was all great. A brief encounter, get it? Because they're wearing briefs. So Miranda is finally able to have sex with Will Arnett inside his own apartment. Perhaps there are no strings attached with this boyfriend of the week? Might he become a boyfriend of the season? Alas, no. While he is actually having sex inside, he seems to be a risk freak. Miranda is finally able to let herself go. And because she is able to orgasm so vocally, Will Arnett's parents, who just happen to be in town, walk in.
So horrifying, especially when you see him looking at them.
Orgasming.
It is the best and worst thing I've ever seen. Like, this is actually the worst thing I think that ever happens to anyone on Sex and the City.
I mean, think
about it.
I mean, Miranda's boyfriend, played by Jim Gaffigan, who's taking a shit with the
this door. Is way worse than that. Are you serious? Can you imagine? At the point you realize you're having sex with someone that wants to be caught having sex by their own parents, that's when you realize you're in the, like, Isabelle Huppert film.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas just seeing someone take a shit with the door open, that's just like, ew.
I guess this is why I rate it slightly worse, only because it's like, okay, what probably happens in the moments after this? The parents walk out, either leave the apartment, go back to the room. If I'm Miranda, I'm like, peace, never want to see you again. Leave, hopefully without seeing the parents. The Jim Gaffigan thing is like, he's in her apartment taking a smelly shit. Like, he would have to finish and you'd have to be like, you need to leave.
I completely disagree with this. I think this is so much worse than that, even with the setting taken into consideration.
I love the actor that plays Will Arnett's dad, because the mom just has a shocked expression, but the actor playing Will Arnett's dad has I feel like his actor's choice was like, he's witnessed his son do this before. Because there's a bit of like, oh no, not a, it, this is still a problem.
It's so creepy. It's a miracle that she was just able to date at all after all of these things that happened to her.
Absolutely. I feel like the call you have to make after this is to Samantha, right?
Yeah, you'd have to. But she's not in the rest of this episode. So back to Carrie and Big. Big comes over.
I'm glad that even in her anger, Carrie was able to change into a fabulous blue slip to go to bed that night.
And to have one last, what is it, roll in the hay?
Yeah.
Tumble in the hay? Something in the hay.
Not needle in the hay.
Not needle in the hay with Mr. Big. He leaves, and of course she gets very emo, as you would.
It's not just that he leaves. She has this moment of self-realization. Again, it's one of the few episodes where Carrie is self-aware. She lets him go. You would imagine if she did not say that, he would have tried to, in his terrible way, cobble things back together, kind of punted. She's making the choice to say, I see that this is never going to be what I want it to be, so I need to cut this off. Go to Paris. I'm not coming with you.
Okay, so then, does she have the right to be so upset about Natasha?
Look, the revisionist history of this series is definitely that poor 26-year-old girl didn't know what hit her.
Okay, so how much time lapsed between the time between the Hamptons episode and this episode?
Probably 6 months. If I remember the episode correctly, she's like, what happened to Paris? He's like, it didn't work out.
Yeah, and she had broken up with him. So what's the problem? He can't date?
It's how were you able to not commit to me? And you're able to commit to this person you just met.
Maybe it's the crazy cowboy outfit you're wearing.
It gave Big the ick.
Again, maybe he's just not that into her.
I mean, here's the problem. I would go along with that if the series did not hold our hand over 4 more seasons and 2 more movies and 1 episode of And Just Like That to be like, these 2 were endgame.
I mean, he left her at the altar. Clearly something inside him is screaming like, I do not want this.
I can't relitigate the first film again, but that was wild. Carrie's voiceovers in this episode are just unparalleled. It ends with an end just like that. Did I?
No, keep that. Guys, you have to know, poor Lauren can barely fucking talk. This is what happens when you're doing like a week and a half's worth of live shows and recording. We've been recording multiple episodes back to back today. This poor woman, she's been taking steroids to be able to talk to you today.
This is what's frustrating is the car got hit in February. I got sick and I've been recovering from that since. Like, I recovered from it, you know, the normal length of a cold, but like my voice just gives out. I think I straight up need to see an ear, nose, and throat doctor.
Are there any fuckettes out there that can assist?
All right, guys. All right. My Kermit the Frog voice is going to attempt this one more time.
Yeah, just don't even bother trying to hide it at this point.
Did I ever really love Big, or was I addicted to the pain? The exquisite pain of wanting someone so unattainable. While I think this was the right choice, they didn't even try. And just like that, I had untied myself from Mr. Big. I was free, but there was nothing exquisite about it.
Beautiful ending.
Ted Manolos.
No notes on this episode. We get what, in my view, is the worst Sex in the City sexual experience of all time. We get Stanford having an incredible plot line, one that was great at the time, but also now in retrospect is very funny to look back on.
You know, as the years go on, we kind of lose Charlotte's transgressive sex streak, but I like this. This is an interesting, pun intended, kink.
Her kink for shoe shopping. And then Carrie and Big, some of their best dramatic work. Sarah Jessica Parker really doing the most, doing comedy, doing drama, doing incredible fake drunkenness. One of her greatest skills as an actor, I think.
Great episode.
Thank you guys for listening.
And we'll be back the following week with a pop culture episode. All right, bye guys.
Ciao.